You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Engage. 78 years have passed since the days of the original USS Enterprise. Now a new galaxy starship has been designed.
Transporter Chief, beam our listeners aboard. Welcome to Galaxy Class, a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast on the BQN and Fandom Podcast Networks. I am your host, Chief Tea Drinker. Look at me with a cup of tea on a Saturday night. I'm Joe Keegan, and I'm going to... Do you know what? I was abandoned last week. David Ryan, my Antipodean friend and Star Trek Trexperts co-host, jumped in at the last minute to help me. So I'm just going to ask the computer, can you scan like the BQN host network and directory or whatever it is you use and see if you can find me some hosts, please? You, listeners, you can't hear it. She's speaking in my ear. She's trying. You found someone? Yeah, cool. Okay. You found Rhea Papagiorgio. Okay, can you beam her on board, please? Thank you. Ah, we have a Rhea Papagiorgio. Beamed in sideways. Malfunction there. And also, you found somebody else, Kevin Scarfe. Excellent. So we have our diplomatic standard bearer, Kevin Scarfe.
Hello.
Chief Recreational Officer, Rhea Papagiorgio.
Hello, greetings.
How are you guys today?
Doing good. Digging out. We had a bad snowstorm here last night, so... Got about a foot of the white stuff.
Oh, that's not much for the great country of Canada.
Well, it was enough. It came down hard enough that it was actually thunder snow, thunder and lightning in a snowstorm. It doesn't happen often. But
that sounds
yesterday.
Like a storm that's created by the gods of rock.
Thunder snow. The storm came from Texas. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's blame it on Texas.
Was it like a portal weapon and it was created in Texas and teleported to Canada?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
That's crazy.
So took me a while to dig out. I went to see a show in a town about 50 kilometers from here. And my friends who were in the show said, do not drive home. And I slept at their house last night and just got home about an hour and a half ago. So
nice.
It's good.
Wow. Yeah.
Cool. Rhea Papagiorgio.
Glad you made it safely.
How are you?
Yes.
What's happening?
I'm pretty good. No exciting news for me, except that, I studied last night until Star Trek came on and then watched Kojak and fell asleep. And that's kind of my days. And if you hear really loud music in the background, that's just my neighbor. Nothing we can do about that.
Oh,
but it's better than thunder snow.
I'm sorry about your neighbor. I hope they quieten down sometime soon.
Hey, they play good music. I can't complain.
Oh, that's okay. But well, I suppose music's one of those things you have to be in the mood for that. And sometimes you might like their music, but you're not in the mood for it. So
sometimes you're trying to, I don't know, podcast, but whatever.
Sleep.
Yeah.
Cool. I have to explain, being chief tea drinker, I've taken to drinking lemon, ginger, and turmeric tea. It's quite pleasant. Because I tried last weekend, I tried to stop drinking coffee.
Oh,
I don't drink a lot of coffee. I have one travel mug a day while I'm going to work.
Right.
And that's my coffee hit for the day. But trying to go cold turkey with that little bit of caffeine that you've become so used to over the decades, my head was killing me. My muscles were achy and spasmy. I felt nauseous, like typical withdrawal symptoms. I was ready. I slept most of Sunday, I was ready for closing my eyes and walking towards the light.
It was
that horrific, yeah. I was like,
well, take
me now.
To quote Raffi, withdrawal is a bitch.
It was. So I've gone back to drinking coffee, but I'm supplementing it with some nice, healthy lemon, ginger, and turmeric tea in my Star Trek mug. Talking about mugs, can I Kevin Scarf. Is that, that doesn't look like you, Kevin.
That's me. That's an old picture. That's my YouTube avatar photo.
Wow.
So I was just testing to see that the chat's working in YouTube as well as in Facebook, and it is. So
that's nice.
People can talk to us whenever they want, however they want.
Yeah, and if you're on Facebook and want your name to come up for us in the chat so we can add it to you with your name, if you go to streamyard.com/Facebook and give permission, that means you won't come up as Facebook user and we won't know who we're talking
to. Facebook user is Tom Van Scotter. So hello, Tom.
Hi, Tom. We don't know Tom.
Not yet.
We've got a lovely BQN co-host, Christos who is maybe just home from the cruise or en route home from the cruise. Not that we're jealous at all. And Rhea, were you like one of the Dublin folk when the Titanic was taken off, waving goodbye because you
yes
in LA?
I went there to wave goodbye to everyone and then came back home so I could go back to school.
I wouldn't. I would have like stuffed myself in someone's suitcase.
The offer was out there, and it was very, very seriously considered.
Wow. Can I show you one of the most hideous things I've ever seen?
Yes.
Ewan's gone through a phase of randomly buying tat, off eBay and whatnot. And this is it looks very old. I don't even know the date on it. 1994. Yeah. Ooh. This is 1994. Guess what it is?
It's 1994. It looks like VHS tapes. No.
Too small for VHS tapes. We'll show you.
A tea mug for chamomile tea.
That's just really horrific. Why would
Is that Christos's relative, Deanna Troy?
Yes, and Amy's new best friend.
Yes, I love it.
That's just ridiculous. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this mug. Is the handles like on the back of her head? Do you have to drink out her ear or something? It's weird. I don't know. I have to also say another thank you to Daniel Broadway, the visual effects artist who gave us permission to use the animated flyby of the Enterprise D that we saw in our intro video. I'm addicted to watching it because it's so ridiculously beautiful. So thank you, Daniel. Shall we check the communication array to see if there's any feedback from our listeners?
We shall.
And yes. I'm not even on the right panel to get the right button to hit the right thing.
Log accessed.
There you go.
Well, from Galaxy Class 124, which was last week, review of episode 2, Paul Wright Jr. Types, so sorry I missed this one. It was during the same time as a mission log stream on Discord. I'm also so sorry I missed last week's because I had a flight lesson that time. So here we are back on Saturdays. Yay.
Yes. I thought I was kind of initially I wanted to go early. Yeah, so we could try and get the scoop on any of the Easter eggs and be first to review. Because episode 1, everybody knew anything by the time we recorded on Saturday. But recording on Friday last week was at the same time as Mission Log, which is our Roddenberry podcast. So it's like slightly more official than us. So we had 4 listeners in total at some point last week and it wasn't working. Plus, I was just super tired on the Saturday because I was up to 2:30, which is, I'm far too old for being up at 2:30 nowadays. Kevin?
What? Yes? Yeah. Oh, it's my turn. Oh, Rashid Usman said, hi, I hope you're well. Live long and prosper emoji.
Oh, thank you, Rashid. Don't know who Rashid's talking to. I assume it's just us, me and Davey at the time.
Just you and Davey.
I wonder if Rashid's one of Davey's friends. Who knows? Or one of our listeners.
Well, Davey could tell us. He's listening.
Yes, he is. Davey, reach out. Let us know. And then somebody called Kevin Scharf says, sorry, I can't be on tonight. There will be lots. Oh, Kevin Scarf, sorry. I thought it was our French friend. Sorry, I can't be on tonight. There will be lots to talk about.
Yes, last week. I was hosting a pub quiz last week, and it was something I had agreed to weeks before I knew we were doing these lives every week. And I'm sorry I missed it, but it was a great discussion. You and Davey held the fort down really well.
Thank you so very much. Weird, like segue, sideways, tangent, pub. I really don't like the word pub. It's just something that I don't like saying. It's one of those words that sticks in my brain.
Well, if it helps, we weren't in a pub. It was for a local community theater. It was a social event that the theater had, and I did a quiz that is pub style. And it was all theater based. It was quite fun. So nice. It might be something that I add to my repertoire of events that I host.
Nice.
And now I know how Davey and how Davey feels when he puts Trexperts quiz together, because I only had 30 questions about theater together, and it was like pulling my hair out to do it.
Cool.
And Jim McMahon. Jim, that's the other person I wanted to thank too, because yes. Jim does a lot of trivia and like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. He's our trivia guy. Rhea, do you have pubs in the US? Or would you call it a bar? What would your preference be?
I think most commonly they're called bars.
Yeah.
Or tavern. Bar.
Tavern? Oh, that's even more.
Yeah, I think tavern's a little outdated.
The oldie tavern.
Taverna in Greece, but here, taverna. Let's go to the bar.
Cool. Tom Van Scotter, I feel I know all of you because of your podcasts, but you wouldn't know me since I've only posted here a few times. Thank you, Tom.
That's good. Yeah, we'll get to know you more now. Yay.
Yeah, come to STLV because I'm going. Kevin's going.
I'm going. Rhea's
maybe going.
I'm most likely will be there for a few days.
Yay. Cool. Yes, so we're all going. Amy's going. Amy lives there.
Yes.
Amy lives at STLV.
Amy lives at the Rio.
Mm.
Not really.
Okay, I feel like our listeners are probably getting bored with our idle chit chat.
Yes, let's get to it.
Stay on topic. We need a wee sound effects, don't we?
Yes.
This is the captain. Senior officers will report to my ready room immediately.
I'm already there, so.
The captain or the retired admiral? But anyway.
Well, number one.
Yeah.
Yes, but we'll get to that. Okay, so episode 3 just aired. I kind of want this season to last forever because I'm loving it. What were your thoughts on episode 3? Exox, Black Box, Exox out. Rhea, you go first.
Okay, just in brief, because I know we're going to get into detail, but I watched it probably 4 times, and after the third watching, something clicked, and I went back the 4th time, and I have a conspiracy theory now, so.
Ooh.
I know. Pretty
was it like clicked in your mind, or was it because of an arthritic joint?
You know, I just laughed like a minute or so ago and cracked my jaw, and it really hurts right now. Now that you mention it, Joe.
Why are we laughing? Why are we laughing at you hurting yourself? That's sick.
I know.
It's not nice.
You love me, I guess. Yeah, indeed, anyway, yes. So I'm like you, Joe. I want this season to last into eternity. I want like the warp portal to pop up ahead of us and more episodes to keep coming out. And yeah.
Mm. So. I know I'm getting cremated when I die, yeah, but if I was to be buried in a coffin, I would just like an iPad above my head in the coffin, just constantly playing season 3 of Picard on a loop until the end of time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Kevin, what are your thoughts on it?
So I've had a chance to watch it twice. I really enjoyed it with a couple of caveats. I've got a couple of reservations. There's some character stuff that I'm not sure I like. And again, I know we'll get into this, so.
Mm, okay.
I might have a conspiracy theory for that.
Oh.
We love a wee conspiracy. We love speculation on this show. You bring all the speculation you can. I said to you and when we were watching it, I was like, I've never been so stressed watching Star Trek in all my life. I was like, I felt my heartbeat throughout the whole episode. It was a great experience because I was on the edge of my seat for the whole entire thing.
Yeah.
I loved it.
That's awesome.
Okay, let us talk about, let's go through the whole episode and talk about what we saw. We left in episode 2, the Titan had fired some torpedoes at the Shrike and zoomed past it to run into the nebula and try and escape. We opened this episode with the Shrike in hot pursuit. Firing weapons, the Titans evading, trying to evade. there's just, you get the impression the Shrike's really big, really fast, really armored, really powerful, loads of weapons. If the Shrike wanted to unleash hell, then the Titan would just be in bits by now. But we know, that Vadic wants Jack Crusher for some reason, or Jean-Luc, we're not sure. So we're on. So I'm just going to go through the scenes. Yeah, you guys stop me if you want to add anything. Yeah. We'll go to sick bay. The crew seem to be blaming Jack for the problem they're having, the fact that they had to go in and rescue.
That's not very Starfleet.
Wasn't very Starfleet, no. But I suppose you've got feelings. You're had this nice wee cushy job, didn't you? Your captain was keeping you safe, and now you've been hurled into this disastrous situation with a bad guy wanting to kill you.
Wesley wouldn't have said that to his little brother, but whatever.
They decide at the end of this little scene that to hide deeper in the nebula, and they fly deeper into the clouds.
But they've discovered that the nebula has organic material in it. It's not maybe not a nebula.
There's was it electrical signals and biological signals. So there's something. It's definitely not just a big cloud of gas and dust in space like normal nebulae, which is the plural of nebula. And I assume it comes from Greek.
I'm sure it does.
Oh, this is where you would add a tidbit of information. Linking us into the Greek language.
I know, but I want to keep going about the episode.
Oh, okay. then we get our opening credits back, which are like 5 seconds long. This is part three, called 17 Seconds. And everybody, I would imagine, was speculating about what 17 seconds meant. And we don't know. Then explains what 17 seconds is about. We go back in time to Riker and Jean-Luc. I want to talk about how we name people. Now, sometimes we call people like by their surname and sometimes by their first name. Like, so I would always call Riker and not Will. And I would always call Picard and not Jean-Luc. But I would call Beverly and not Crusher. Because maybe there's two. I don't know.
I think it's about level of respect, because, and I also think it's a generational thing with our generation. Like, I always called my parents' friends Mr. and Mrs. Smith or Jones or whatever the last name was, but I cannot imagine my friends' children calling me Mr. Scarf, you know? So there's that kind of respect and a thing in your mind too. And Picard and Riker are like, they're serious officers, so you call them by their surname. Not that Deanna and Beverly aren't, but they feel more like friends than Riker and Picard do.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think I get what you mean.
Geordi's the same way.
Yeah, I've actually found I used to call Picard, and now I call him Jean-Luc or JL or JLP. And I think there's maybe some intimacy there as we've gotten to know Picard more. Mm. At least for me, he's become more of, you know, I like JL. I know everyone hated that nickname for him, but it's short and to the point. And Beverly's always been Beverly because I just don't like how the word Crusher sounds. It's awkward. But
interesting. I forgot to, do you know what? I took ages doing my wee slideshow and I forgot to put it up for our chat. And so we're back with Riker and Picard. They're drinking Swafford whiskey, which we still don't really know what it is, but it's appeared in MacGyver. It seems to be a CBS thing. MacGyver, Terry Metalis was involved in MacGyver and Swafford was featured in that. So I think it's a CBS/Terry Metalis thing, fake type of whiskey that doesn't actually exist in real life.
Does this mean then that the events of MacGyver happen in the Star Trek universe?
I assume so. Which means that
the old MacGyver.
Which means that Stargate is in the Star Trek universe because of Richard Dean Anderson was both in SG-1 Perfect. And MacGyver. So it's the multiverse. It's all linked, all crossing over. I think that, to me, futuristic LA. I think that does look about LA like, and that does look like Guinan's bar. Yeah,
I think so.
It feels like it should be.
I think it's 10 forward.
Yes. Okay. They are talking about Thaddeus Riker's just been born on the Titan. I was a bit confused at this point. Well, I think it's because I wasn't paying attention. So they're in the bar on LA. That means the Titan is in Earth. Orbit of Earth orbit. And Riker's just beamed down to meet Jean-Luc. And they both beamed to LA because I assume Picard was in France. I don't know. It doesn't matter. They've got transporters, so they can just beam everywhere. There was something wrong with Thaddeus. We get the idea when he was born, and Riker was called to sick bay, and it took him 17 seconds to get there because when the medical officer called him from the bridge, it wasn't like a happy, oh, you're a dad, blah, 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 baby's born. It was about, oh, you better get down to sick bay or something up. I've got a comment from a Facebook user.
That's Jim McMahon.
Jim, if it ever happened in the Star Trek universe, then all Geordi would need to fix the warp core would be bubble gum and a paper clip and some rubber bands. Yeah, anything can be. If it's stuck, use WD-40, and if it needs stuck, use duct tape. These are good life rules. Thanks, Jim.
Exactly.
Troy calls then. Oh, no, can I talk a minute while they're chatting? Obviously, they've used some de-aging process. What are our thoughts on the de-aging?
I'm glad that they set this scene in a very dark bar.
Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah, Riker's hair was a little too black. But, I mean, I appreciate the effort.
Yeah. I think kind of wish they hadn't, maybe. I think. And just maybe tried to do a makeup. Because I think there was a fakeness to it. And you could tell it was some AI de-aging process that had gone through. So it kind of took me out of the story. Because I was laughing at how stupid the de-aging looked.
It wasn't as bad as Data's.
No.
In season one. But
again, yeah. I think because of lighting.
That helped.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let's not dwell on that. I just got the impression that they'd created the episode and they thought, oh, let's do some de-aging on them. How much money do we have left in the budget? $1.29. There you go. Somebody de-aged them on some kind of 8-bit computer from the 1980s. Who knows? So after that, we get a particularly, I was going to say Moni, Troy calling in up, and that image is not there anymore. I don't know why. Troy holographically calls Riker to say that Thaddeus has thrown up all of her engineering with 4 feet tall projectile vomit, and she's not brushed her hair in so many days. And he's down having whiskey and cigars with his old friend on Earth.
And bring the whiskey.
Bring the whiskey, yes. Bring the non-existent
stuff. What was she? Why was she with the baby in engineering? But I really, really hope we get more of Troy this season than just the nagging wife, which everything I've seen so far has just been she's going to be the naggy wife, home with the kids. Mm. Why aren't you home with the kids? So I really hope we get something better than that from Troy, but...
Yeah. I really want to know why she's not talking to Riker, or Riker perceives that Kestra and Troy don't want to see him at the moment.
I think we'll find out.
Yeah,
now, I will say
we've got 7 episodes to go.
It was a very sweet scene there in the bar with Riker and Picard, but Riker just kind of in passing says to Picard, "Oh, I hope you have this someday," which I thought was like a horrible thing to say to anybody, but a super horrible thing to say to, you know, to Jean-Luc Picard of all people, who we know doesn't even want children, who's much older in age than someone with the energy to chase after children. It just, you know, I get it, the foreshadowing, whatever, in that scene, and Jack was conceived, you know, at some actually probably before this, so Picard was a father and didn't know it, but Why do people say that to other people? That's just awful. That's just
I think I didn't really take it as like everybody should have kids. I took it as more I've loved being a dad, and I would like everybody to have that feeling that I felt, rather than you should have kids. Weirdly, I take it, Rhea, you've had that quite a lot.
Ugh, yeah.
I think maybe women get it more than men.
Women do, yeah. And I've heard people say it to other people, and just so inappropriately. Yeah, so, one of the things that's on my radar.
Kind of condescending way. Yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that scene's over. Then we go back to... no, we don't go back there. then we go back to the Titan hiding in the nebula. Okay, sensors are out because of interference from the nebula. Mm-hmm. They've got this kind of bugs me. They've done it twice now. Like the sensors don't work because of interference, which kind of doesn't really make sense in my brain. So they get crew standing at the windows on lookout like it's an old sailing ship. They did it in Discovery. Way back, was it the Vulcan Hello or whatever the first episode was, where they had to use Captain Georgiou's old telescope to see the Klingon device. I was like, seriously, you're a 24th century starship. You must have other things that can see out into space. Well, anyways,
I will say, like, flying airplanes and stuff, you can fly with instruments or you can fly visually. And visually, even if you're just a couple miles away, these planes are tiny. So I can only imagine if they're looking out the window through a nebula for the Shrike, no matter how big the Shrike is, it's going to look like a little gnat.
That's true.
Especially the speed these things will travel at through space. It'll close on you in absolutely no time. We get another reference here to, we're back on the bridge. I think we see Ensign Foster at this point.
Yeah, the bad guy.
Well, we don't know at this point. It's just Ensign Foster. It's just a dude on the bridge. Mm-hmm. There's another reference to the electrical and biological signals from the nebula. Is it Vulcan? I heard somewhere she was half Vulcan, half...
Delton.
Delton, yeah. Okay,
that's another pet peeve of mine. Just let her be bald. You don't have to make excuses for a male character being bald. Just can we please have a bald female character without any excuses?
I heard that the actress just wanted to be bald for the character, so
it'd be perfect. Let her just be a bald Vulcan. I hope it's not they're not explaining it away by saying she's half Delton, but it's okay for women to be bald.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, that is something. When I was bald, I took a lot of crap for that, as though I had to defend it. But so yes, Rhea will get off her soapbox now. I'm sorry.
Okay. All good.
That's two strikes and you're out, Rhea. So
it's three. Anyway, I've got one more.
No, you're on two strikes just now.
Okay.
You've got one to go. Yeah. Okay.
I'm done.
I wasn't making a baseball reference. I was just telling you the rules of my podcast.
Okay.
There are 2 hours until the warp core's fixed because the Shrike has damaged it. We go to Seven in her quarters. She's been locked in her quarters for insubordination, and she's listening to some music, and it's Mozart's Ave Verum. And then Sydney LaForge visits her, and it's quite. Do please say, have a wee picture of this. Do I have a wee picture of this? Yes, this is Seven in her quarters. She's got a wee chrome figure of the Voyager, USS Voyager, on a shelf. Spied it right away. And she seems to be fixing some kind of device. Sydney has just turned up to see how she's doing as a friend. And it's just quite touching. She talks about how she was expected to go into Starfleet because of her dad, and they were never not going to let her in. And everybody assumed that she was going to be an engineer, but she wanted to become a pilot. And talks about how difficult Geordi found it making friends. Is that right? I'm trying to remember the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And she realizes that Seven's kind of been mistreated in a way, and that Geordi wouldn't do that. It's a really, the upshot is it's a really touching conversation. But she finishes it by saying Commander Seven, mm-hmm. which is really nice, not Commander Hansen, which is Shaw's, Davy explained it, dead named her mm-hmm. last week.
I mean, the sentiment is nice, but it seemed forced. Like, I want to know, I kind of wonder if Sydney has some motivation for this. Like, why? Why? Just because she wants to be friends with Seven? Is that why?
She likes Seven. She thinks she's a good commander. She doesn't maybe like Shaw. Rather befriend somebody that's... There's more of a chance that they develop a good relationship. I like Sydney LaForge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Conversation. I want to get to know her better. I want to see more of her. Yeah, so I'm glad we saw that.
Yeah, I think she can dial back the references to my father, my father, my father. Like, we get it. But I agree with you, Joe. I want to know more about her, and I agree with you, Kevin. That whole scene was, I was kind of like, why are we doing this? But you know, I guess if it's to show that she's a.
If your captain has confined his first officer to quarters, would an ensign be allowed to just go and knock on the door and say hi?
Like, apparently anyone can go and knock on the door with that security guard there.
Wouldn't this piss Shaw off a little bit? Hmm. Maybe that's why she's doing it, just to piss off Shaw.
Possibly. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe she's a bridge officer, so she's maybe got privileges.
She's very cute too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, let's move on. So we're going back to Sick Bay. Jack and Beverly have a discussion, and Riker and Picard come in. We meet, I think we met, did we meet her already? The CMO.
Dr. Jerkface. Dr.
Oak. O-H-K.
Yes. Dr. makes Shaw look like a really nice guy faced. Yeah.
Just doing her job, I suppose. There we get this long talk between Beverly and
the scene.
Yes. This is the scene.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, yes.
This was disrupting my teenage brain and that feeling of family I got from The Next Gen. I felt like I was watching my parents having an argument and I didn't want to take sides, but I felt myself going, oh no, it was a very binary choice for me. Somebody made a mistake here and the other person kind of had to live with the consequences without giving too much away.
Yes.
What do you guys think?
This was one of my caveat scenes. It felt like we needed this for plot reasons, and not because of character reasons. If Beverly, I don't know. And again, it's my perception of Beverly as a character from how we knew her on TNG. If this happened to her, like the fact that she doesn't let anybody know, she doesn't talk to, she gets pregnant and then cuts off all of her friends.
Yeah.
It's really hard for me to see that. I guess she has a good reason, but you know, it wasn't Picard's fault. At this point, it doesn't seem like it's Picard's fault that they're being chased down by the Shrike and all the other people who've been chasing them down. At this point, it doesn't seem like it's his fault. So, like, they're causing enough trouble on their own to get into trouble to use Picard's sort of penchant for getting into trouble all the time as a reason to not have a relationship with him seems, I don't know, it just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I think we're on the same page. I loved the scene. Absolutely loved this scene. And I thought they both delivered it beautifully. But I think Picard's anger is 100% justified. You know, like, did it not occur to Beverly before she got pregnant that she's with, you know, Jean-Luc, the life he lives. What I, you know, maybe I guess love can blind you to those things. But I think everything Picard said was 100% spot on. I don't think anyone has the right to do to him what she did to him. Mm-hmm. What really, I mean, I was hoping that they would, even before the season aired, and they were talking about this kid, it's Beverly's kid, oh, it could be Beverly and Picard's. I was just screaming, like, no, no, please, no, that's please, no.
That was my hope, too.
Because that whole trope of the woman gets knocked up and has to flee in shame, you know, is kind of how it comes across. And then the single mom having to bear the brunt of raising the kid while the dad does nothing. Of course, in this case, she cut the dad out of his life, which is a whole other trope and something that happens just way too often. Okay, I was disappointed they did it. I thought the scene was about as beautiful a way as they could, I don't know,
I
justify it.
I am so on the same page with you, Rhea. I think it's some of the best acting we've seen from Gates McFadden in all of Star Trek. I think she's lovely in this scene. I just didn't like the scene.
Yeah.
And I've got to live with it because that's the plot. But
yeah. Yeah. You know, like all the excuses. And you know what? From a character standpoint, of course she's going to believe these excuses. And you know, when you just in general kind of start feeding yourself a certain story and you make decisions based on that, I mean, that's, you end up making wrong decisions. And so, I mean, I think it's so real. It's so realistic. It's, you know, terrible series of choices. And why aren't they taking their, like, you know, their space shots, their birth control or whatever. That's a whole other issue. But yeah.
And to be fair for her, in her mind, Picard was there when Jack died. Picard was there when Wesley was lost. You know, Picard has been at the center of all her greatest tragedies, too.
Mm-hmm. And yet they still had like a however many years relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I love this scene. I think Gates emotes really well. And this is the Kevin, you're right, it's the best acting I think we've ever seen from her, or certainly I've ever seen from her. Interesting tidbits from this scene. She mentions a bunch of things that Picard was involved in. First thing she mentions is the shore leave on Kasparia Prime, which is mentioned in the Deep Space Nine episode Change of Heart.
Oh.
And Dax is planning Worf and her honeymoon on Kasparia Prime. Mm. But all I could think of, because Dr. Beverly Crusher had gone to Kasparia Prime, it just sounded like Casper, the friendly ghost. And I just had, oh, she's got another ghost lover, does she? Oh, who knows? So the other things, the danger that Picard was involved in that Beverly was trying to protect Jack from, in 2381, refugees from the Kalara from Kalara 5 were angered by Romulan relocation efforts in advance of the Romulan supernova. They kidnapped Jean-Luc and held him for 9 days. Same year, Reman assassins held a disruptor to Jean-Luc's head. Denatra sector, assuming named after Commander Denatra from Nemesis, who rushes to the Enterprise's aid when it's been pummeled by the Scimitar. And then Jean-Luc was in negotiations with the Praetor and a photon grenade that went off just meters from him. A bit rubbish photon grenades. They don't kill you when they go off meters away.
Yeah, and, good point.
Maybe it's just like a photon, just light. So maybe it's just a flashbang. Maybe it was okay. Can't imagine it was like the photon torpedoes of ships. Beverly makes a nice wee comment about Picard saying that when the galaxy calls, you come running, essentially. Mm-hmm. And you love it.
You never
turn your back. You always go and help where help is required. I don't think I've seen Picard that as angry as we've seen him at Beverly. I think that's where the most of my discomfort came from. It's like, oh no, they're fighting. They're fighting, stop.
I mean, it's understandable. He feels so betrayed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Mm.
How she used what he had said about his father against him. You know, like, he just felt betrayed on every single level, and he was. Oof.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I th- up to a point that I was like, oh, Gates, you've made, or not Beverly, you've made a huge mistake. You kept this secret. You never told Picard. That's just a terrible, horrible thing to do. And I'm really surprised at you. That's what I was thinking when I was watching the episode. But then she explains all these horrible things and the fact that Jack, being the son of the famed Jean-Luc Picard, would always have a target on his back. I was like, oh, okay. Now that you put a 24th century spin on it, I'm like, it's a bit different. So I'm just kind of, I came out, I moved a little bit towards being on her side slightly, but only slightly. Jim, I totally agree with you. I felt really uncomfortable. I felt like I wanted to go and sit in another room until I was asked to come back in.
And speaking of people outside the room, how about Will and Jack? It's an interesting conversation that they had too.
Because Jack's, they're outside, they're waiting outside sick bay, like we should have been, and not nosing in on this conversation. Jack's pacing. Suppose he's still worried about his mum. And that Riker says something that's quite nice, that Jack's been 20 years in the making. He's been cooked up on the ship over this long period of time. And he's really just referencing their long-standing friendship and their kind of touch with romantic relationships in terms of Beverly.
Yeah, that was very sweet.
Yeah.
I do hope they nail down a little more, like Jack, he's older than 20. He's in his 30s at least. I'm surrounded by 19, 20, 22-year-olds every single day of my life, and their faces are smooth like an android's bottom. Mm-hmm. Jack is much older. I really hope they clarify that because that takes me out of it so much. But 20 years, that was so sweet.
Because the actor is 36.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So. But they always do that in TV shows, don't they? Like Ender's Game, Asa Butterfield was, 18 or something, supposed to be playing a 5-year-old. And in June, Paul Atreides is supposed to be 15 at the beginning of the June books.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet is, in his mid-20s. And I don't know how...
And Jack's lived...
Oh, on you go.
Jack has lived too much of a life. Too much for just 20 years, so... Please, like Terry Metalis, go in and fix what you need to fix and make him like 32, 34.
I suppose when you've got the DNA, you're made from the DNA of legends. You're going to be a legend yourself, aren't you?
That's true. Yeah. Just precedes you into the room. I could go for a green steak right now. But yeah.
After we go back to seeing Picard and Beverly and their... They've finished their argument. They're sitting down trying to understand what's going on with Vadik and the Shrike and being pursued. Why is Jack being pursued? They're not entirely sure. Beverly seems to think it's not about Jack. It's about Picard. We still don't know. We're like, oh, okay. Let's see where this thread goes. Then finishes up with questioning Jack's accent. Maybe it's in his DNA, which totally confused me. Like a French man played by an English
actor. Yeah.
But the characters.
I'm glad they addressed it though.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Do you know what? Will there be accents 300-400 years in the future? Or will it just be this homogenized smoosh because everybody just moves everywhere with such ease?
Exactly. And you're not going to have white people and black people and Japanese people and whatever people were all going to be homogenized.
But yeah.
Whatever. We'll roll with it.
I know. I like that idea. So Jack, they're going to swap place. Oh, sorry, Rhea, you want to add something here?
Yeah. So Beverly, when she says that it can't just be about Jack, she suspects it could be about Jean-Luc. So earlier she said she called him, she reached out to him because he was the only one she could trust, Jean-Luc. But then she says she thinks this might be about Jean-Luc. So that makes me kind of question her motivations a little. Did she reach out to him because, hey, this is about you, get over here and make this go away?
Yeah, if she thought it was about him, then why did she call it? But I suppose if he's really the only one you can trust to help you, then if you think it's about him, him being the best person for the job as being the best person for the job.
You know, to quote Shaw, you got us into this mess, you get us out of it.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, let's move on. They swap places. So Jack goes back in with Beverly and Riker leaves with Picard. Picard comments that it is the relationship is irreparable. Mm-hmm. And is he referencing his relationship with Beverly or his lack of relationship with Jack? I wasn't entirely sure.
I thought it was with Jack because Riker asks him, you know, how'd it go? Or Riker says, what did she say? And Picard says, it's immaterial. And the way he said that line, I just loved his delivery. Then Riker says, but it's your son. Because just before that, Beverly said she had told Jack about who his father was. And Jack had every opportunity to go meet his father and chose not to. And I think that was like the final nail in the coffin of Picard's heart there. But that also kind of, I didn't get any indications in the first couple episodes that Jack knew that Picard was his father when they first met it. So I don't know.
Do we think that story wise, this story is here because they're paralleling Star Trek II, right? Kirk finds out he's got a son. The mother never told him. It's the exact same thing Picard's going through here. And there've been a lot of Star Trek II references through the whole series to date. And this is just another thing that mirrors what happened in Star Trek II.
And I think they did it because, like, the fans wanted Jean-Luc and Beverly to have a kid. The fans, except for me, I think it's horrible. But I think that's why this whole storyline came up in the first place. And because it did, and because it had never been referenced before, they brought in the Star Trek II storyline. Although in Star Trek II, Kirk knew all along that he had a son.
Mm. Oh, that's true.
But yeah, if they're going to do it, they might as well reference Star Trek II, the pinnacle of Western cinema.
Okay, so we're going back to the little lookouts at the back of the ship, watching now.
Actually, I'm sorry, one more thing about this scene.
Oh, sure.
Between Jean-Luc and Riker. Jean-Luc says that he needs to go apologize to Shaw, which I thought was pretty awesome. But he said his primary concern is for the lives of this crew. For now, ... is what I add. So... we're getting to my conspiracy theory here, but
do you want to share?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
We'll get there.
Oh, well, we're not there yet. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, we're not there, but that's like one of the first seeds. He's so adamant. The primary concern is for the lives of this crew. Okay, I'll remember that.
Okay. Then we're back to the little lookouts. Not this slide. We'll get to this in a minute. And the lookout spots the Shrike, kind of swoops out the nebula. We got a wee 47 reference here. It's bearing 047, range 3,000 meters and closing. We got a 47. Did you miss it?
Yeah, 3,000 meters would be really close.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's ridiculously close, especially the ships are of the order of hundreds of meters in length. So, yeah. I don't think they do ranges particularly well, or distances, or sizes, or science very well in New Star Trek. But hey, that's a little gripe for later time. The Shrike just fires, keeps firing, kind of damaging the Titan. Shaw gets really badly injured. He's like, blood's coming out of his mouth. He's got a head wound. His knee's all smashed up. And he's just really, really displeased at this point, and he transfers command to Riker. Says,
I love how he did this. That too.
You get us out of it.
Yes.
And just he does, like, doesn't even pause for breath. Literally just instructs the computer to transfer command. And then Riker takes over and does the weirdest maneuver. They fire a torpedo at the Shrike, then detonate it with a phaser.
Mm-hmm.
It causes a giant shockwave that literally throws the Shrike back head over heels. And I was like, I'm not sure about that. But yeah, go back and watch it. It just seems like a very, very powerful torpedo explosion to do that.
Yeah.
We're leaving the Titan for a while, and we're going back to Metallus Prime. We see La Serena docked where it was on top of that building. Rafi's asleep, and there's the news report about the attack on the Starfleet place with the portal weapon. Loved this scene coming up. Oh, there's the injured thingy. There's a bit of that. We're missing slides. I keep on forgetting to put the slide forward. There with the Shrike being blown away back into the nebula. And then we have this conversation with Worf and Rafi.
Yes. Yes.
Did you recognize the music Worf was listening to?
No, should I have?
Yeah, it's First Contact.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it was the Berlioz piece, Valon Sonor. Do you remember when Picard, during First Contact, is in his quarters and he's listening to really loud classical music and the whole room's shaking because of the volume, and then Riker comes in and Riker's like, Bizet? Picard says, Berlioz. So yeah, that's this exact same piece that Worf was listening to while he practiced with his new Klingon blade, which is called the Kurleth.
Yes.
Cool. Any thoughts on this?
I love the Worf and Rafi stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
When
Rafi asked who it was, when Worf first started to introduce himself, I started word for word, I'm Worf, son of Moog, House of Martok. And then he kept going and it was awesome. It was awesome. And I'm with you, Kevin. I love the Rafi and Worf show, and that spinoff series would be incredible.
Mm. I wasn't fussed about the Rafi stuff in the first couple of episodes, but now the Worf's in it. I think they're going to make a really good double act. Worf is hilarious. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Was it Dax Jadzia that originally said that? Who said Klingons don't have a sense of humor? But Worf nails his humor here. The line should have been, "I am Worf, son of Moog, House of Martok, son of Sergei and Helena, House of Rishenko,
yes,
bane to the Duras family, slayer of Gowron, husband of Jadzia. I have made some chamomile tea. Do you take sugar?"
Yes.
It's kind of disappointed that he missed out the two women there. But it's a minor detail. He missed out his wife, his dead wife. Right. Yeah.
What about his son? Yeah. He didn't mention
Father of Alexander. Yeah. Father of Alexander. I suppose we've got limited time for the episode, so could have kept on going.
Holder of the sacred Chalice of Reeks.
Chalice of Reeks, the Holy Rings of Beta Z. But that list of his houses he's in, then to finish it with, "I have made some chamomile tea. Do you take sugar?"
Yes. Yes, Jim McMahon, that's very Lwaxana with all the titles after his name. Love it.
He comes up with another funny line. He's been working on himself.
Yes.
Just full of little one-liners. They argue a lot in this episode about what to do. And she realizes he's the handler and he's a legend. And JL has spoken about him so much in the past. He says that Rafi is the heart of a warrior and he knows something is coming. He alludes to this a couple of points through the episode. Something is coming, something bigger than just this portal weapon attack on the Starfleet and the theft of weapons from the Daystrom station. I'm kind of convinced that, mind we saw the Daystrom Institute in Japan. I want to say it was Japan, was it in Okinawa?
In Okinawa, yeah.
Yeah. They keep on, in this series, a season of Picard, they keep on calling it the Daystrom Station.
I'm thinking that's different.
Different place, like a space station.
Something.
Yeah. We will see. And then he goes on to explain that it's a human named Titus Ruka. who has multiple underworld contracts. They're going to try and track him down and find him and work as a team and stop this evil plan from being hatched.
So, speculation about what the other weapon at Daystrom is?
Yes.
Lore comes to mind.
Yeah.
Oh, what's Rhea's thought?
Well, this is just wishful thinking on my part, but
Peanut Hamper?
Yes, and all the maniacal computers and Jeffrey Combs and yes.
Oh.
That would be awesome. Joe disagrees.
It's not going to be. If they do it, it's just might it make the whole season seem a little bit less serious if it's peanut.
All they need to do is when Raffi and Worf go to Daystrom and they're panning across the shelves of stuff. If we see an exocomp in there,
yes.
Okay, that would be beautiful.
Yeah, that would.
We all win that way.
Yes,
we all win.
We will compromise at that. But is lore a weapon? I don't know.
Where was the last time we saw Lore? Was he disassembled?
Descent? Was it Descent?
Have we not seen him since? Was he wasn't in any of the movies, was he?
No.
I think it was Descent.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong, listeners. But we are going back to the Titan. Riker and Jean-Luc are on the bridge strategizing, and not for the first time this episode, they disagree. Mm-hmm. Riker wants to save the crew and just hide in the nebula until the warp drive's fixed and they can escape. Jean-Luc thinks that the only thing they can do is just turn and fight, which seems a really stupid thing to do given the power of the Shrike.
Mm-hmm.
It's for a couple of times this episode, thought the Shrike was a cat and the Titan was a little mouse. And the Shrike just toyed with this little creature that was always trying to escape. Pawing it, dragging it back, mutilating it, just making it live in terror, really. But I think the way the Shrike just kind of hovers around, it's like some kind of hornet.
Well, that's a great image, the cat and mouse thing. And then okay, so now we're getting back to Rhea's conspiracy here.
Okay, please.
Okay, so now all of a sudden Jean-Luc wants to turn and fight? What's up with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll get back to it.
Okay. I look forward to this thing. Riker just says, thanks for your advice, and orders LaForge to evade more. And says, keep us squirrely, which I really liked. Never heard that one before, but do you know what? I've never heard it. I know exactly what it means. Just be nimble and be all over the place and be random. Try and not make a path that is easy to follow.
Yeah, I think that's an American idiom then. I've heard it a lot.
Oh, okay.
Keep it squirrely.
Squirrely, cool. Jo-Hell and Varric was absolutely pecking and jabbing, like she said. Yeah, without doing any serious damage. Just like keep it alive, but torture. Yeah, for a long time. We're back to sick bay. Shaw is in very bad shape. Beverly kind of takes over his healing. Apparently you can detect delayed internal bleeding from concussive injuries. And they don't show up on the fancy 24th century scanners that they have in sick bay.
Yeah.
Strange. They're in the middle of fixing Shaw. And Shaw, Jack's there also because he's still in sick bay. And Jack apologizes to Shaw. He didn't mean for any of this to happen. And Shaw's like, how does she keep on finding us? Mm-hmm. And then we see Jack, the light bulb goes off, thinking, yeah, how do they keep on finding us? Is there something about the ship that they're able to track in some way? Then we go back to the bridge. 10 minutes until the warp drive is fixed. We got another reference to the nebula being in some kind of unknown anomaly. and having electrical and biological signatures. I kept on getting vibes from, now mind the nebula, there wasn't a nebula, it was a big living space creature.
Yeah.
The telepathic space monster.
From getting Voyager. Like V'ger vibes.
Yes. Yeah. Then I was also getting like thinking Gormungandr. Oh. Is there a Gormungandr nest at the center of it? Is that what makes it? Because they mention also that there's a gravitational well at the center. Mm-hmm. And a gravitational well is just something with a lot of mass, really. Unless it's a singularity. Which has a lot of mass usually. So is there a lot of mass? Is it a nest of something? Baby telepathic space monster Gormungandrs? We will find out. The more we watch, the more there are questions. They're not giving as many answers in this episode, apart from later on. But we'll watch and we'll talk more. I love this bit. Jack, who's at the beginning of his investigation to try and find out why the Shrike is always able to track the Titan, tries to get to the bridge. But this is the one ship in Starfleet that has security posted to the bridge.
Yeah.
You can't just be any old Joe. Like, you could be on the Enterprise D and just go, oh, I'm just a passenger. Like, I'm just taking a wee cruise ship ride. I'm
going to go to
the bridge and bother the captain. Just
Because Shaw is so by the book, right? Shaw has to follow all the rules.
Or maybe the rules were implemented after the TNG episode Neutral Zone.
Quite possibly. The frozen folk kept on coming up to bother them. So we get some bridge security, which I really liked. I loved this bit. This is my favourite bit in the whole episode. This is the bit where my heartbeat got faster than I think it's physically supposed to go. So the warp drive's fixed. There's a little window at the edge of the nebula. There's a wee opening in the nebula clouds.
Yeah.
And the Titan's kind of... Do you know what? It's just excruciatingly slow for a spaceship. Obviously, the nebula is really big. So it's coming up to the edge of the nebula and the Shrike comes out of the nebula and it starts to... It goes to Varric. Varric's charging our big main space weapon that we've never seen before. The Titan is just out the nebula and this big kind of glowy white orangey orb flies over the Titan and it detonates and opens this big circular opening that the Titan can't evade and travels through it. But we don't know, or what we're just about to find out, is that it's one of the portal weapon things. So Titan's going through this portal straight in front of it and another portal has opened up right beside the Shrike and the Titan comes through that. So basically, this is where I got the cat and mouse vibe. There's the mouse trying to escape and the portal weapons, the cat's paw, just dragging it back into the nebula. They try another time and again, they get dragged back in. And so they have to make the decision to go back into the nebula and try and escape again.
You know, the money they saved on the de-aging scene with Picard and Riker, they put into this scene. What beautiful effects. This was gorgeous.
Weirdly, the effects changed from the first time they used the portal weapon to the second time. So in the first time, half the Titan is through the first portal. So the back half is still to go through. And then the first half is emerging from the second portal. So effectively, the ship's broken in two bits at this point because one's traveling in and one's traveling out. And the second time they use the portal weapon, the Titan is fully through the portal before it even starts to emerge from the second portal.
See, you got me thinking because when they used it on the recruiting station, the whole station, like whatever, disappears in this portal and is all crunched up and then it falls out through the top in a million pieces. So I wonder if there's different kind of time delays that Vedic can set on the portal for how long it keeps something in there before it comes out the other end. But
I have no idea why my images are so horribly misaligned, but you can see the Titan flying towards this beautiful portal with some gravitational lensing around it.
So that leads me to question the timeline of events in this series. When was the portal weapon stolen? And how was it?
Oh, good point.
How was it copied so quickly? Right? Because we know there's two portal weapons. The one that blew up the Starfleet recruiting center on Metallus Prime. And this one that's on the Shrike.
Don't know. I think it's the answer to that.
Inside job.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that what you're thinking?
Well, we do know. Well, not to get ahead of ourselves, but we know who the bad guys are. So it's not that impossible to think that there would be agents on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
we already know there are agents on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else about this scene?
Yes. Again, Riker orders the Titan back into the nebula, but Picard, again, he wants to fight. Now, he's not putting the lives of the crew first. He wants to stay and fight. And this is where, like on my, after the third rewatch, I don't know, something clicked. So watching it the fourth time, I'm like, absolutely, Picard, he's a changeling. We already know we have changelings on board the ship. Well, not yet, whatever, but by the end of the episode, we know. Why would they be dumb enough to just send one when they could send two or three? At some point after the scene with Beverly, you know, Picard walks off and then we don't see him again until he's on the bridge. Okay. He's been taken and replaced by a changeling. And because every time Riker wants to escape, Picard's going out of his way to keep the ship there and keep it engaged with the Shrike. Picard's a changeling. This Picard.
No.
Just like Martok in Deep Space Nine.
That's going to really upset me. Where's the real Picard then?
He's on the ship somewhere. It was in that meantime. Like, it was real Picard in that scene with Beverly.
Right. Okay. So the Ensign Foster's just turned into Picard temporarily. Or
another changeling on board. Ensign Foster could have had like a little, you know, dime in his pocket that was another changeling or something.
Wow.
Interesting. Okay. But didn't Riker and Picard come back from sickbay to the bridge together?
No, they separated.
But we didn't see, did they?
Yeah.
Did we?
The camera didn't follow him. And Riker was already on the bridge, and then Picard came up and joined them.
Interesting.
So, anyway. Just a theory.
Okay. So I'm trying to find... I don't know why all my slides are all misaligned. It's really bugging me. So I'm trying to re-add them. Do you guys want to talk about us going back to Metallus Prime to Worf and Raffi's pursuit of Titus Rika?
This was also good.
Yes.
Starfleet. Starfleet subterfuge, like a Starfleet covert ops like show would be great.
Yes.
And if you want to give me a show that stars Worf and Raffi, I'm in.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there. You know, Michael Dorn, you can live through the makeup every day because I love where they've gone with Worf's character. Zen Worf is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, back on Metallus Prime. And did we ever get a confirmation? Is Metallus Prime, what's its relation to Orion? And like the Orion system, is it part of the Orion system? Or, I know there was some talk about that, but
I do not know.
Yeah, maybe that's neither here nor there. But yes, Raffi conspicuous in her hood, and Worf in his not Klingon warrior gear, but casual gear. That their teamwork was pretty phenomenal, and yeah, Worf's comedic timing is just hilarious.
It is very good. I love Raffi's comment about his casual gear. I was like, do you wear that to a Tuesday beheading?
Beheadings are on Wednesday. I love it. Love it.
That was even funnier, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They then capture Titus successfully, so Raffi kind of loses him and Worf's right there to grab him and restrain him. So they've done their job, what they set out to do in like the space of 5 minutes. So
yeah.
Go then. We'll go back to Titan. Poor Titan's getting a beating. The Shrike is just And then more I think I've maybe fixed my slides. No, we're not at this bit yet. So yeah, it's taking a beating. Jack visits Seven. Yeah. And again, this reinforces the point that anybody is allowed to go and visit somebody that's been confined to quarters. Yeah. The Jack's suspicions are that they're leaking something, blood in the water. Mm-hmm. The sharks can detect from miles around. Mm-hmm. That they are leaking something, which all I could think about was Star Trek VI at this point.
Yeah.
It's got to have a tailpipe, and we've got all the sensors on board for analysing gaseous anomalies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. They're leaking something. So Seven decides to help him. Jack knocks out the security guard, the wee O'Brien-looking dude. Seven calls him insane, and then they go to investigate. And doing so, they realise that a compound called verterium that insulates the warp coils is leaking from some... There's been some sabotage, which was another... Star Trek VI kind of reference.
Yes.
The ancient workers of Earth fearing that their jobs would be replaced by mechanization would throw their wooden shoes called sabots into the machinery to damage it. I just knew that. I can't believe that wasn't a question in our Trekspert's quiz.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, what were the wooden shoes called? Sabots, I know the answer. You'd have still beeped in earlier.
Take note, Davey.
Yes, please. Then, yeah, they go to investigate. We're back on the bridge. Again, Jack and Riker and Picard are arguing about the strategy again and disagreeing. And this is where we get this Lieutenant Tavine mentions that there's a giant gravity well at the center of the nebula. Mm-hmm. And they have to avoid it because it seems a bit unsafe to venture any deeper. They are investigating down in the... What room is it they're in? The room with all the pipes.
The pipe room?
Yeah, let's call it that. Environmental controls, verterium control conduits, warp coil... insulation room. Ensign Foster turns up and he looks all evil and malevolent and attacks Jack and rips his mask off. Jack punches him and his face wobbles. I think we have a wee image of that there. How do you change that slide? There we go. It's them with their masks on, seeing the damage that's been done. No, I do not have a picture of Ensign Foster's wobbly face, and we've seen kind of wobbly faced folk before, but we don't exactly know what this means. Jack is then incapacitated and he's breathing in verterium gas, which is deadly, and we see what we think is him waking up, and Seven's there saying something like connect the branches.
Yeah, and what was all that about?
Weird blood vessel type roots grown out the back of or along the walls and the ceiling behind Seven.
Oh yeah. Which could be his retina, like that after image of his retina. But it looks like Seven's got the Borg Queen tendrils coming out of her.
So yeah, we don't really know what that says. But it turns out Seven's come back and is trying to wake Jack up because he's been knocked unconscious. So this is a kind of a verterium induced hallucination.
Right.
Or something. So who is this gentleman? Man, speaking of Star Trek VI, how did that panel get sabotaged?
Star Trek
established that you can't fire a phaser on a starship without setting off an alarm.
Well, Foster, I mean, he disabled some other whatever detection systems to even detect that the verterium was leaking, so maybe he turned off the phaser alarm panel.
Possibly.
But that's a good point.
Then, where are we now? Back on La Serena.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I've got a cry dog. Cry dog needs out to the bathroom, I think. Are you okay, Cooper? He wants to play the ball. Back on La Serena, they are questioning Titus Rica, playing a kind of good cop, bad cop thing.
Hilarious.
I love Worf as the good cop.
Oh, gosh, hilarious. I don't do that anymore.
Rika is getting weirdly shaky, and we just assume because he's on this planet, he's been taking all the drugs that you spray in your eyes, and he's got withdrawal symptoms. Then we go back to Jack waking up, and we Seven comes in to save him and gets into sick bay. Jack is dying, unfortunately. Picard is called down from the bridge to sick bay because he's losing his son that he's just met. And Beverly jumps in, saves him luckily. And I think something changes about Picard's face. He's gone through what Riker went through when he had the 17-second journey down to sick bay on the Titan all those years ago. Does he become a dad at that point? Does he actually
17 seconds in the turbo lift?
Yes, I think. And when he sees his son eventually come back to consciousness, Cooper, don't do that, please.
Scene here that conflicts with my conspiracy theory, because if they put it here, I mean, they wouldn't have Changeling Picard go down to, you know, become a father in the turbo lift and go down to sick bay to watch his son, you know, almost die. So that, you know, unless they just screwed up in the editing, and that should have come sooner. But anyway, conspiracy theory is still out there.
Interesting. I don't know. Because obviously the real Picard is kind of unconscious in a cupboard somewhere, according to your theory. Right. Yeah. Okay. Go back to Worf and Raffi, starting to lose patience with Rika's evasiveness. Jo Helen is not on board with your Picard changeling conspiracy theory, Rhea. Sorry.
Because of that scene, which, again, that's the one scene that throws it off for me.
I don't think I would be happy if they did that, weirdly.
I agree.
Yeah. But hey, we'll stand to be surprised.
We'll find out.
But I'm questioning Rika. Then the big reveal comes for the episode, I suppose, doesn't it? His face wobbles in the same way as Ensign Foster when Jack punched him. Worf realizes it's not withdrawal symptoms. He needs to go in his bucket. Re-sleep. What did Odo do?
He just went to his bucket for. They have to relax and go into their liquid form, right?
Yeah, but they used a term, revert
to liquid state. Form.
But Worf says, how long have you been away from the Great Link for? And Raffi's looking all confused. But now we know that he's a changeling. And I suppose we put two and two together and say, Ensign Foster must be a changeling again. Changelings have infiltrated Picard season 3, effectively at this point.
Here's a thing. I watched with subtitles the first time. And the very first scene with Vadic and her minions on the Shrike, whenever the minions spoke, and it came up as subtitles, even if you didn't have the subtitles on, the subtitles actually said, Changeling says. So the subtitles broke the...
Spoiler!
Spoiled the reveal that the aliens were changelings.
Wow.
Wow, that's all we can say about that. Somebody messed up in the subtitle room, didn't they? They were supposed to know that. Unless it was intentional. The guy playing Titus Rica is an actor called Thomas Decker. And we've seen him a couple of times before in Star Trek. He played Thomas Picard, Jean-Luc's son in The Nexus. the blonde-haired guy, yeah. And he was also Henry Burley, the wee boy in Captain Janeway's holodeck novels.
Now, the Victorian one. She was his governess, right?
The governess, yeah. I have to go back and rewatch those because I still don't know what they're about. those episodes were Learning Curve and Persistence of Vision.
That is so cool that they use the same actor.
Yes. Where are we going back to now?
It jumps between Metallic.
Really quickly jumping about.
Because then it goes back to the bridge, and now Picard is back on the bridge, and his comments to Riker about you can't be fearful of loss, that just sent Riker off the deep end. Which I kind of have to wonder too, if Riker's feeling like here Picard's gaining his son and Riker's like reliving losing his son, if that's kind of why he took that jab so personally. But then again, this goes back to my Picard has been replaced by a changeling theory. But
I came across as really mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like throwing his dead son in his face. You can't be scared just because you lost a son, almost. Then we're quickly jumping back to Worf and Raffi. Worf's telling her all the details about the changelings and the Dominion War, as if Raffi wouldn't have been involved in some way. She'll know exactly who the changelings are, I assume. And then they decide this is where they form their team, isn't it?
Yeah. Raffi says cool.
Yes, they are going to work together and they're going to head for Daystrom Station. To see what the big thing that's coming, what the big danger is to Starfleet and the Federation.
Peanut hamper.
Yes. again, guys, can you remind me to change my slides, please? Because I keep forgetting.
Change your slides. Oh, great shot. Okay.
Yes, we are Ensign Foster, heads into a room, some kind of coolant place, warp core coolant, and he puts a device on it. And the device is counting down in some alien script, which I kind of feel like I recognize.
It's Orion.
Is it Orion? Okay.
I think it's Orion, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
Or no, that, maybe that's...
It felt a bit Dominion-y.
Maybe it's Dominion.
Which would make sense now. He places this device on and then leaves. And then shortly after, it explodes. Jumping ahead of herself. Bomb detonates, they've lost warp capability, and Riker decides to turn to fight the Shrike. And this again, if my heartbeat was high earlier, my heartbeat was even higher now. So the Titan, they're facing each other in space. The Titan just fires for all its torpedoes, 4 torpedoes. Riker says, fire everything that we've got.
Mm-hmm.
And all they can come up with is 4 measly torpedoes. Okay. Very quickly, a portal opens up in front of the Shrike. And the torpedoes fly into the Shrike. Oh, no. Torpedoes fly into the portal.
Yep.
And then the other portal opens up behind the Titan, and then the torpedoes impact on the back of the Titan in the same location, crippling it, essentially causing major damage.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh no, that's just a genius weapon. But then do you remember the time in TNG when they were testing the guidance system on torpedoes, and one went off course and they'd lost it, and its remote detonation wasn't working? So they had to go and chase it in a shuttlecraft.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there should be some kind of point defense system on starships that you can either take out torpedoes, or if a friendly torpedo gets too close and it comes in within like a friendly field of defense, that auto detonates the torpedo. I should be a Starfleet engineer.
It will be, I'm just like, now that'll be a new feature, but effectively the Titan fired on itself. That just, like, I don't know why that makes it so much worse.
It was totally worse. And then we get Riker ordering Picard off the bridge.
Yeah. Remove yourself from the bridge. You just killed us all. That just like,
oh no, nobody's talking. They were best friends. They're now not talking. Beverly's not talking to Picard. Nobody's talking anymore.
And did you see Riker's face at the end? And what's crazy is he directed this episode.
Mm.
Like, he wow. I have goosebumps.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the Titan's lost power and has fallen towards the gravity well in like pitch blackness. Don't think we've got another. Pitch blackness.
Which leads me to Rhea's conspiracy theory B. Wait a minute, has Riker been replaced by a changeling? But we'll find out. Somebody has been replaced by a changeling.
It's a ship of changelings and Vadik's a good guy. Okay, I'll buy that.
So that leads to the question, do you think Vadik is a changeling? Is she?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So why are the changelings taking orders from her? Or is is it just looking like that and she's actually taking orders from the changelings?
Hmm.
Is she a Vorta who got her ears pinned?
Is that why she's covered in scars? Mm. Who knows? And that's really it for the episode. It fades to black and the Titans fall into its demise.
And you're left standing there like,
And the next seven episodes will just be the Titan falling and everybody dying.
And cutting back to Raffi and Worf.
Yes. And that's it.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm stressing me out talking about it because I've relived those stressful moments again. Weirdly, look. What's in that? I want to know what's in this gravity well down here. There's loads of rocks and stuff. Space rocks.
I think it's a single Kelpian.
Screaming. Single Kelpian that put on enough weight to be a gravity well, I guess.
Screaming through subspace because it ate too much dilithium. Sure.
Exactly.
In the previous episodes, we've run through the end credits and highlighted what we've learned about the end credits because they're a story in themselves.
Any difference here, Joe, that you noticed?
The end credits are all the same. Yeah, as far as I can see. We get no further explanation on the meaning of any of them from this episode. Some have already been explained in episodes 1 and 2. Nothing more got explained in episode 3. And there's quite a lot of end credits, so there's still quite a lot to be explained. And that's that.
That is.
That's a wee episode. Speculation then, because I always like to have a wee bit of speculation. Rhea, you've speculated a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Beverly said trust no one. And when you've got changelings involved, you can trust no one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe the changelings are working with the conspiracy aliens.
Yes, we gotta get them in here.
They have been taken over by the Schisms aliens.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
I thought that from the very start. We seem to have more bad guys.
Yeah.
We've also got the changelings. So we had the Red Lady terrorists. We had Vadik on the Shrike and her minions. We've now got the changelings. Somehow Lore and Moriarty are going to feature, whether they're good guys or bad guys or whatever. We've speculated about that in previous episodes. So we've got a lot of bad guys going on this season. I don't know. We've got 7 episodes and there's a lot to explain. See if they launch any more questions at us, then I'm going to be hella confused.
We still have a couple of old friends we haven't seen yet. We've only seen a flashback to Deanna. So we still have to get her in here. Yep. And we haven't met Geordi yet.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we already know there's actual physical Troy scenes with Riker.
Yeah.
And an observation lounge from the trailers.
And we know that Lauren Moriarty are coming. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's lots to come.
Mm-hmm. But all in all, shouldn't be yawning live on a podcast. That's very unprofessional.
It's very late where you are, right?
What time is it now? 21:41. Do you know what, listeners? Episode one of our live episodes was 1 hour 48 minutes long. Episode two was also 1 hour 48 minutes long. This episode is currently 1 hour 34 minutes. So I'd like to just keep on talking for another 14 minutes.
I don't know if Rhea's bladder can go another 14 minutes. So well, let's wrap it up.
Okay, cool. No worries. I need a wee sound effect, don't I? Let's go with...
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode and hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. You can also tweet your thoughts at Galaxy Class Pod, or you can follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts.
So please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the show. You can also follow the entire network's podcasts with our master feed by searching BQN. This way, you won't miss any of our fine shows like All Good Things, Union Federation, History with the Zilagis, Infinite Diversity, Mickey's Marvels, Trexpert's Quiz, and What's the Tea, Bev? So, Rhea, where can people find you when you are shining your models of the USS Voyager?
Well, when I'm not polishing my Voyager to a brisk, beautiful shine, you can find me in the simulators, pretending to fly airplanes, and on the BQN Collective, or the Hive Mind, whatever it's called. I think I'm falling asleep here. Posting Star Trek adjacent memes and spreading changeling conspiracy theories. So, Joe, where can people find you after you've been replaced by a changeling who's going about your daily activities and you've been tossed in a closet or a cupboard somewhere?
Okay, so am I the person in the cupboard that's unconscious, or am I the changeling doing nefarious things around the place?
Your pick.
Oh, okay. I want to be the changeling. Just to, like, I don't know. I would go and hide in an ATM machine, I think. And just as people get their money dispensed, I would just tear it up. Just put a little bits of notes. Because that'd be bad of me, and I'd be a changeling, so that'd be fine. When I'm not doing that, though, you can email me joepodcasts@gmail.com. You can get me on the BQN Collective, or you can get me on Twitter or Instagram at joeyjoe77uk. And Kevin, where can people find you when you're not, I don't know, under your house looking for mice to torture?
How did you know that's what I do on weekends?
You've still got dirt on your elbows.
Well, if I'm not doing that, you can find me also in the BQN Collective on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram at ScarfK. You can find me doing another podcast with a bunch of local friends called True North Nerds, and that is at True North Nerds.
Incoming transmission.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We're putting out more exclusive content for our patrons that you won't want to miss, like It's Green and Amy's Math Moments. With a monthly Patreon subscription of five US dollars or more, you can join our meetings of the Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Watch your Patreon messages for details. For more details, go to patreon.com/BQN. A huge shout out to our very own associate producers, Jim McMahon and Davey Willett. Mwah! We are so grateful to you for joining us today and for your continual support. We love you.
So at this time, we want to thank our executive producers who make all this possible. Special thanks to Mark White for our artwork and some guy called Joe Keegan who did something about music.
Something you might never be listening to it just now. I know, weirdo. Who writes music? Thank you for beaming aboard the Galaxy Class, and until next time.
Beheadings are on Wednesdays. Stay classy, Galaxy.
Remove yourself from the bridge. You just killed us all.
Joe, son of Joe and Navarin, House of Keegan, I have made some lemon and ginger tea. Would you like some?
Yes, please. I could use some tea right
it
now.
It sounds delightful, actually.
Okay, listeners, enjoy listening to this music. We're going to go now. I don't know, computer, teleport, transport away our hosts and leave them particleized, please. Thank you. Bye.